Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Morning of the Podcast, the only rugby podcast to give you all the news, views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Morning of the Podcast, Morning of the Rugby Podcast on Facebook. We're on Anchor and Apple Pods and Google Store and all that sort of shit. And we have another rugby podcast that most of you already listen to. So we're back this week, twice in a week, almost pre and post week 14. Oh, I don't even know what fucking week of the Premiership it is.
I don't even know what you're saying.
No, I'm just like talking. Just talking, mate. As you can tell, I'm joined by the Lensman. It's just the two of us at the moment, which will be interesting until Ben gets here to add some sense to proceedings. We'll have a quick chat about last weekend's action. Doug was at Worcester, now gainfully employed. As well as seeing a few other bits and pieces now that all rugby matches are on the television.
Rog.
And we'll have a look forward to the weekend, see if there's going to be any difference, see how the shake-up's going to go down and take it from there. Why don't we start with the game you were at? What was it like at Worcester? Bit odd, I guess, an empty stadium?
No, well, mate, look, I've been doing the Premiership football a couple of games of Premiership football, so I sort of knew what the no crowd thing was all about. Look, to me, it doesn't really bother me. I actually quite like it with no crowd. I can get in and out of the ground. I don't have to sit in traffic. It's banging. Long may it continue.
If
fans want to help their clubs out, just send them a fiver in the post every Saturday.
I'll tell you what, long may continue. Duncan Weir's hair. That long may continue.
Just an absolute scandal. Although I read today that apparently he's doing it for charity. Growing it out.
It's commendable, whatever he's doing it for. But even so, it's an incredible piece of genetic ingenuity.
I don't understand how a man that looks like that has hair like that and is from the place he's from.
How has Duncan Weir got a mousy brown afro? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. You mentioned you did a bit of Premiership football while you were on lock. When fans weren't allowed back in the stadiums there, and you also mentioned that you're having played some local league football, that even at Premiership level, all of the standard cliches were still there. The shouts that you hear on the sidelines of every Sunday league football match up and down the country. Similar to rugby? Is it all still the same? I guess you hear
I don't actually know, mate, because I was on the gantry for that. Right. So I couldn't really hear the players because obviously all the stiffs sit underneath the gantry in the stand. I couldn't really hear it.
But in fairness, we usually hear a lot more through the ref mic anyway, don't we? So we can hear some of those standard shouts.
Yeah, I think I've played a lot less rugby than you, Russ. So I don't know the cliches as well as you do. I know the cliches really well for football because I've done most of them a lot.
Well, the old get his hands off it. Get his hands off it. he's holding me all of that sort of shit,
all of that stuff. He's holding you know,
like, let it go, ref, come on, sir. Sir, don't even know what they're shouting for, just sir,
just shouting sir, that's just all they're doing, sir. Whereas with the football ones, I know what football cliche shouts are, so as with most of the games this weekend, I think there was just a lot of shit rugby.
There was a lot of general rustiness, wasn't there?
Yeah, look, I mean, cut to the chase of this game. Had your man not been sent off, Worcester were looking pretty tidy. And I think Gloucester were not so great. And it is one of the few sendings off that as soon as I saw it, I was like, well, dude, you're gone, mate. What are you even waiting for? Because it was pointless. It was pointless. Bad technique, just bad everything, really. And if he'd be given that game again, he wouldn't have done it. I just don't understand what it is he's trying to do.
No.
And he's basically hit Johnny May and the Swede.
Well, that's the long and short of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's an odd one, isn't it? Because in a lot of these cases, you can kind of understand what the player in question is trying to achieve.
Yeah.
You know, they may have got it horrifically wrong, but at least you can see a little bit of method in it. Yeah. But Nanai on Saturday, it was just the weirdest, it was one of the weirdest, like, straight reds I've seen.
I just don't know what he was trying to achieve. Because he wasn't gonna hit the guy hard enough to
turn the ball, dislodge or turn the ball over.
I just don't know what he meant by that.
No.
I'd love to ask him. Mr. Nanai, sir. What do we mean by that?
Just, what were you trying to achieve?
Yeah. Do you feel silly, Mr. Nanai, sir?
Nanai sounds like fucking N-dubs, isn't it? Nanai. apparently, that's what.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I don't really know, to be honest. Yeah, so we might be getting Ben with us in a second. That'd be interesting. Anybody particularly stand out in the game for you? Anybody?
Reece Zammit came on and was decent. Ollie Thorley was decent. The Gloucester pack obviously doesn't look as good. You know, why would it? They've lost a lot of tonnage from that pack. Worcester wise, they've got potential there, I think. Billy Searle started the match. Duncan Weir came on. That's
how did Billy Searle play? It's probably the weakest area for Worcester.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I think, you know, they've got two fly halves who are sort of 1A, 1B, which, to use an American football saying, if you've got two quarterbacks, you haven't got a quarterback. Yeah, that's the one area of their game, of their squad, that I think they need to address.
They've always lacked really that sort of field general, I guess. You know, like John O'Lance was a good player, but he spent a lot of time injured and he was, you know, he still wasn't that sort of player. You know, like someone like a Freddie Burns or someone that has been a very good fly half at some point, knows how to move a team around a pitch, kicks decent goals, and is a general sort of...
Well, there isn't a focus point for opposition attack.
Yeah.
Which I think Billy Searle will be. I'm not sure, you know, Duncan Weir's not as bad. Billy Searle might be a bit more mercurial than Duncan Weir. I think Duncan Weir's a pretty much by the numbers.
Yeah.
By half, but... yeah, that's the one area they need to address if they want to sort of move up the ladder, so to speak.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I think they've got a good platform. I think their pack is decent. I really like Ethan Waller. He's an ex-Saints player. Don't hold that against me for liking him, but I do think he's a decent player. I just think he's, you know, someone that is a jobbing Premiership prop. And then yeah. second, well, their back row, I love Sam Lewis. I think he's brilliant.
Ted Hill's
brilliant. They've got Kvesic back.
Yeah,
I think that's a good engine room. I think that's a platform to build on. I do think Sam Lewis is one of the most underrated players in the Premiership.
Good, isn't he? I mean, yeah. he won't get a shot in Wales until he moves back to Wales, I guess. And I know all those.
There's so many ahead of him. I don't know how he. I just don't know how he overcomes the weight of numbers in front of him, really.
What about Gloucester? I mean, they ran out comfortable winners in the end, but Thorley bagged a couple of tries. Singleton played. Got on the sheet. Obviously, you mentioned Reece Samet.
I do think Jack Singleton probably is one of the luckiest rugby players in the world. Really, I think he's massively overrated. It had problems with his line out. I don't think he's that brilliant in the loose. What do you want me to say? I think he's
overrated. Rich. That's fine.
Yeah.
Good. Let's move on. Welcome, Ben. You're here to add a little bit of something.
The pod's got nicer.
No, just got 50% more pleasant. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad. Just got back from Bristol. Had a nice trip. Yeah.
Had a lovely trip.
Yeah. 3 days of eat out to help out.
Barefoot.
Drove barefoot all the way along the M5.
Surrounded by Toblerone wrappers.
Always. I'm always surrounded by Toblerone wrappers.
Fantastic. Did you get to watch any rugby over the weekend? You watched Bath versus London Irish?
I saw the Bath game and I saw sort of decent chunks of most of the other games. I didn't see any of the game you were just talking about, so I'm glad you started with that one.
Good.
But terrible games, weren't they? All
In
of them.
In general... Yeah. I mean, I didn't watch as much as I'd like to, but in general, they were pretty average. And Doug mentioned that right at the start. It was almost like every team had excessive amounts of rustiness, helped by some pretty pernickety officiating in general.
Well, yeah, they've been the
off feet thing. It's like when they first got the high tackle directive. It was like, right, we're just going to ping everything, and you know, it was laughable.
I think that will settle down in a few weeks, and I think the off feet thing is to stop them flying into rucks, which obviously we've mentioned a few times before. They need to sort of crack down on. It was the people getting pinged for not rolling away. You know, sometimes they were just completely jammed in there, but I think it was a bit of a perfect storm of. Very harsh refereeing, probably through no fault of the referee. It's been what they've told to do. Plus, all that rustiness led to a lot of dick fingers. So it was just very stop-start error strewn of 30-plus penalties in some of those games. And you know, some of them were bordering on unwatchable. And it very much came down to it was sort of win a penalty, kick to halfway, win another penalty, kick into the 22, and then you either score or give away a penalty.
Yeah.
And then it all started again. There was hardly any, until the Saints game. The Saints game was, there was a lot more rugby in that game, but, you know, it was very stop start.
Saints struggled to try and glue it together, though, didn't they?
Yeah, I think
Wasp
back row. Those laws suit them down to the ground, don't they?
Let's talk about that game now then. While we've segued into it. I didn't see it, but obviously probably the most open game of the weekend. And Saints come out on the wrong end of it, Doug.
Yeah, like I say, I think it was a symptom of just trying too much. Just situations where just taking the contact, going to ground, recycling possession would have been the easy thing to do, but we tried the offload or we tried to flick the ball inside, or we tried to roll for the extra yard, or we ran into isolated contact. It was just a bit sort of 5% wasn't right there, and it cost Saints during the game.
Yeah, I think that was the first game that I saw where you could have actually said the centres, it was worth them actually changing up. And Saints did get their centres involved a bit, but one of the sort of side effects of the interpretation of the laws was if you got isolated any distance wide, then you pretty much were guaranteed to get turned over or a penalty against you. So I think the way Saints play maybe played into Wasp's hands a little bit. But take nothing against Wasp's back row. They were excellent.
Yeah. And your man, Willis, not Willis.
Jack Willis.
Yeah.
Jack Willis. Yeah. What Bruce. A player that guy. He is just brilliant. I was watching the game with a Wasps fan, actually. And, you know, he just said every time Willis was over the ball, turnover. As soon as he clocked it was Willis going in to the breakdown, it was turnover. Just couldn't shift him. And he's so quick, he latches onto the ball and moves it before you've got time to cover it up. And then the player's instinct is to grab him with the ball.
Yeah.
And then that's the turnover one, you know?
He reminds me of like
me?
All like say the best bits of Sam Underhill and Ben Curry, Tom Curry, with regards to the strength at the breakdown, the speed, the awareness. You know, Underhill is very, very good at what he does. He jackals, he tackles, whereas Curry's a little bit more wily, I think, than Underhill, and plays his sort of situations a bit better. But what I've seen from Willis, and obviously before he got that injury at the start of, was it the start of last season? They were tipping him for a World Cup place, weren't they? So
yeah.
Before maybe sort of the end of the season before, if that was the case. Because that's flat me. I didn't even know what I'm talking about now. The World Cup was technically this season, wasn't it?
That makes any sense.
So in year one, pre-COVID.
Yeah, God. Yeah, one PC.
BC, one before COVID.
There were tips for him picking up England honours, weren't they, and potentially going to the World Cup. And then he got that knee injury about the sort of same time as Sam Simmons did, didn't he? I think it was. And they were both ruled out pretty much for the same time. And I think, obviously, England are in no shortage of strength and depth in the back row at the moment, especially at flanker. But he looks as though he's going to be right in the mix and could well be looking at something in the autumn.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be a definite to get a cap at some stage. I think he suits Eddie Jones a lot more than Simmons does. If we're talking about England flankers, we should probably mention, if you haven't already, Jack Clifford being forced to retire.
Yeah, that's a shame. Is, he was the captain of the under-20 side that featured Sinclair and Noel and Slade and the likes. And he was a fantastic player, a really good player, and never really got the accolades that he deserved. I mean, he won a few England caps, didn't he? But he was kind of perennially injured.
He's the most capped undefeated England player.
Well, there you go.
Really? That's great stat, Ben.
Where did you pick that one up?
I nicked it off someone on Twitter. It was doing the rounds. 10 caps, no defeats.
Well, we'll talk about Twitter later, I'm sure. But one of my favourite Harlequins, which isn't hard because they're an unlikable bunch, but...
red chows, red chinos, and gingham shirts.
Yeah, he was
don't knock either of those things.
everything that's everything you think about a back row player was Jack Clifford. Always looked messy. Was in there or thereabouts at every breakdown. Was a bit of a nose to play against, I'm sure, but just busy. And it just shows you just what a brutal game it is when players like that have to retire at 27.
Yeah.
I mean, extremely. If you're a professional footballer that has to retire at 27, you basically have to have your leg amputated.
True. True story. One thing I did want to pick up on about the Wasps Saints game or Saints Wasps game was some standard Twitter fury regarding Naya Vuro, who obviously deliberately kicked or tried to kick Joe Lord.
Malicious, Russ.
Malicious. He is a horrible, nasty individual, that Naya Vuro. Yeah. Have you ever seen anything more ridiculous?
Yeah, every week on Twitter. It's, you know, why would we think anything different would ever happen?
That's true.
Just some absolute Johnny on Twitter giving it lemons about how Naira Voro is trying to stamp Joe Launchbury's eyes through the back of his head. Like, yeah. Get over yourself. I've had a nice 4 months without having to listen to that shit.
It wouldn't have been. I mean, rugby was really quiet over the weekend. Rugby Twitter was really quiet over the weekend, wasn't it? Apart from then when Sunday afternoon rolled round, there was no, especially with all the games being on telly, you would have thought, oh, there would have been all the Twitter noises out and about with their own, oh, we've got to cite this, and oh, what about that, and oh, that's a snazzy cardigan, and
oh, that's a nice, that one smells, I don't know, basil.
Yeah, it took all the way to the last game on Sunday afternoon for someone to go, oh, you should be cited. And if anybody has ever been tackled, especially if someone is, if you're running forward and someone's grabbing hold of your legs, it is a very natural thing to do to try and shake those people off. And by shaking them off, it, you know, you're trying to sort of push them, aren't you, with your legs. In no way, shape or form is he deliberately trying to kick Joe Launchbury in the face. And I think the fact that the reaction or lack of it from Joe Launchbury was enough, you know?
That's usually how you can tell.
It's the measure, isn't it?
I think to stamp directly on someone's face in that circumstance, you have to be a fairly significant type of psychopath.
He was 3 yards in front of him. How can he couldn't stamp because a stamp is a downwards motion. He was just trying to free his foot from the clinches of a big gargoyled man.
Gargoyled?
Yeah, he's not the prettiest, is he, Joe Launchbury, let's be fair.
Still a good player, though. He was one of the players over the weekend that you thought didn't look rusty. I thought he just looked like himself. Whereas a lot of players, there was a lot of bad hands going around, wasn't there?
Phallus digits everywhere.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where there was a lot of phallus digits, and that was in the first game of the weekend on Friday night at Harlequins. Everybody was building it up to look at this new sale side, look at it packed with 7,000 South Africans, littered with a couple of Englishmen, Manu Tuilagi, and Sam Hill started in the centres. Tom Curry started like a steam train. He got two or three turnovers in the first 10 minutes. It was fantastic to see. The Dupria brothers, who were basically like Huey, Dewey and Louie from the DuckTales. Robert Dupria had an absolute shit show with the boot. He was so bad. Like, just before the half, he basically missed one from bang in front. He then missed one from probably even closer minutes into the second half, and Steve Diamond gave him the old butcher's hook. Literally, he missed a kick, and within seconds, AJ McGinty was on the pitch. But I mentioned Tuilagi there. I doubt he had the ball in hand more than two or three times across the entire 80 minutes. Ben, you mentioned about centres getting in the game. I mean, it was a shit game, and it was, I think it was Luke Pearce. It was very stop-start, and it was just a right nightmare. But Sale just could not get going at all. Landano, and Marcus Smith played really well for Quinns. They didn't let Sale settle at all, but I was really, really surprised at actually how poor Sale were in general. I was expecting, you know, Harlequins aren't the best side. Yes, they turned sides over at home. I think this weekend, Sale against Exeter at Sale will be a completely different proposition. But of all the teams that I expected to hit the ground running, Sale were one of them. They were flying high going into lockdown. As I say, it's only really, it was Tuilagi and Hill in the centres that were the only kind of newbies, as it were, and they didn't even use them. It was a really, really strange situation. And Diamond giving away, he said about they gave away something like 10 penalties or 11 penalties in the first half, and you know that's just for Sale. There were probably seven for Quinns, and it just ruined any sort of flow of the game. And I guess that again, we talked about that being a bit of a theme as we ran through the weekend.
Is what you're saying that international centres are Steve Diamond's version of tungsten tip screws?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Let's have a bit of a chat then, Ben, about Bath versus London Irish. Bit of a new look Bath. Ben Spencer starting at 9. Impressive.
Yeah, he made a really good start.
Scored a try in the first.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a very good
help, isn't it?
Yeah, very good try scoring record, and he's a good finisher, and basically they turn the ball over to him and let him score, but still got to be finished. There's an authority to him. He's played in a European Cup winning side, and you know, if the ball needs clearing, he often takes responsibility for it with the box kick, and he's very accurate with those because we know where he's been playing. So I think he made a really good start. I think they'd be very pleased with him. Bath's pack did really well. You know, of all the teams that were using their rolling mauls, they were by far the most effective. I think 3 or 4 tries came from rolling mauls, off the hookers. Again, they didn't really use their backs a lot, but there was a couple of flashes from Watson and Joseph. That was a brilliant finish. But Irish were pretty easy to beat, really. Just, you know, they played into the script of it, you know, give away a penalty at the ruck, give away a penalty at the mall, batter in striking range again. And they'll certainly face more difficult tasks. I mean, that Bath front five is pretty decent. And with the back row they've got, the outside backs, you know, two halfbacks will make that a very good team. And they've got their scrum half. Drury's probably still out on Priestland, but they're sniffing around fly halves, I believe. So nothing's going to happen this season, but next year, you never know with Bath. Faletau, Underhill and Mercer is going to be great if they can keep that together for the bulk of the season.
How did Josh McNally play?
Good. Yeah, he got around well, made a few big hits. You know, he's a hard-working player, which works in that front five, because that front five is doing a lot of grunt work.
Who was Yules.
Yeah, Yules made his 100th appearance. And, yeah, he put in a couple of decent hits. Underhill put one in, which was penalised, which I thought was a bit of a ridiculous decision. But it didn't, you know, it was only a penalty. It wasn't anything else. You know, Bath, I thought the lad at fullback for Irish had a decent game. Tom Parton. He put in a decent shift. You could almost say 9 to 5.
oh, that is superb.
I just want to tell you to get out.
How long, at what point over the weekend did you dream that up?
Do you know what? I didn't say that just to get that gag in. He genuinely did have a decent game. But, you know, it just spread through the team. Like, it was a very lackadaisical performance. Like, Loder, who looks a good player by the end, he was making silly mistakes. It wasn't their best performance, but it was a better performance than that joke, so we'll leave it there.
might be worth it. Might be worth it. I don't think anybody watched the Exeter Leicester game. Probably one of the most uneventful games of the weekend. The only thing I will say is to annoy the Exeter Chiefs for Change people. It seems that even in an empty stadium, they managed to play that tomahawk chop over the PA system, which is a bit unnecessary. And in a place where they're getting pelters for all the cultural appropriation and the disrespect and borderline racism, because apparently that's what it is, to play it over the PA system to an empty stadium is probably a bit much. I don't know what you think about that, but you know, it's not
up.
Ideal.
It's not even two fingers up. It's the middle finger up while mooning.
Yeah, on live television.
Yeah,
I think that was a bad PR move, I would say.
No, I loved it. I loved it.
More of it. In fact, I want more of it. Well, give the people what they love.
Yeah.
And then at Ashton Gate. Did either of you watch any of the Bristol Saris game, Ashton Gate?
Yeah, more dick fingers, sadly.
I mean, I saw a chunk of the first half where Saracens were pretty much making life pretty awkward for Bristol. And I think they were 3 points ahead. But I didn't see the second half. I think there was a dramatic ending, but I don't know. There was a lot of Bristol fans contacting me to pretty much saying they were the real deal. And I'm pretty convinced that even with the players that have left, a fully motivated Saracens would still have too much for Bristol.
I don't know. I think there's a bit of I think that's more likely what you're going to see from Saracens going forward. I know they were missing. What were they missing? Owen Farrell,
Farrell and Daly. Yeah,
yeah. But I think the players that they've brought in to replace the other players that have left, and who knows how many more are going to leave. To be fair, you got to remember that. When those England players are gone, that's a third of the season those England players miss. I think it's not going to be a walk in the park for Saracens when they come back.
No, definitely isn't.
No, I think you might be right. But I just think if this situation hadn't occurred and that was Saracens in second against Bristol in third or fourth, they would have...
Found a way to win.
Yes, subconsciously there'd have been an extra 2 or 3% there, I think. That's not to take too much away from Bristol in themselves, and you know they had to win the game and it is what it is, but I think to crown them champions for next year is probably a little bit early.
What did you make of my semi?
What did we make of your what?
Semi Rodrada.
Well, I'd like to point out, you know, that I said a lot of these flashy signings that clubs have made don't win championships, and I think that has been evidenced this week in that Carl Sinclair and Semi Rodrada, they didn't exactly set the world on fire, did they? You know, they're good players and they add to that squad, but I think you know, we're looking at players that tip you over the edge when the big games come, but they're not players that win games. I don't think any rugby player outside of a 10 wins a game on his own.
They're putting out an interesting team this week, aren't they? Have you seen it?
No. I have, yeah.
So Earl and Malins are in. Malins is at fullback.
Yeah, Pietal's not even travelled, has he, I don't think.
No. Randall and Thomas back to the bench. But yeah, Hughes,
that's
Earl
where the
and...
difference is.
Lua is a
decent. Going to be, isn't he? I mean, you mentioned Bath back row of Faletau, Underhill, and Mercer. We've got, you know, Ewers and Vermeulen and Armand at Exeter, for instance. You've got Where are we with other back rows? There were loads on the tip of my tongue then, and I've just lost them all. But where the difference really lies now, and where Bristol, I think, will be a lot stronger, is within that strength and depth. So bringing in, so from having, I don't know, Vui and Luatua and Thomas, and then having Earl, who could play anywhere across that back row, bringing somebody like that in, as opposed to bringing in sort of an academy graduate, or unless they are the likes of Sam Lewis or Ted Hill, you know, who are big players now for Worcester, you know, some teams struggle with that level off the bench, which is what really sorts the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think every team has got a good, real decent starting back row. You probably look at almost at least every team and go, that's a decent back row. I mean, Doug mentioned it earlier, but Kovacic and Hill.
Lewis Hill.
You know, that's a really good back row. Gloucester are going out this week with Ackerman, Ludlow and Paledri. And, you know, again, you'd say that's a decent back row. That's mobile and it's powerful. But they seem to have a lot of youngsters on the bench. Whereas, as you say, Bristol have got Thomas as their back row cover, who started last week. So, yeah, you could be right there, Russ. I think, you know, strength in depth is... It does help if the Saracens players are being spread out around the league, but that's still to pan out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's pretty much it, isn't it, from the weekend just gone. We've done Saints Wasps. We've gone through the Saturday games, and we spoke a bit about Sale and Quins. Some other big news today. A bit of random news. I mean, when you think of all the referees that are on the books, is the making redundant of JP Doyle, which seems a very strange decision. He's the only one who I can see that has suffered this fate. Could it be he's one of the higher paid ones and they just decided to trim the wage bill, get some younger blood in? I mean, he's still a very good referee, isn't he?
Knows.
Yeah, I think that's exactly
I
right.
I think they're making it up as they go along. I mean, tell you, there doesn't seem to be a lot of redundancies from blokes who get expensive
250 grand a year.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of accountants being made redundant at the RFU. Just people who actually improve rugby.
Yeah, I think I think if JP Doyle was refereeing a game, you could always be pretty sure it was going to flow pretty well. I remember a few sort of high profile games, sort of semi-finals and finals, where he's let it flow rather than referee the balls off it. The game where Tom Youngs got punched years ago,
Selesi Mafu.
There must have been
Premiership semi-final.
Yeah, there must have been 7 or 8 incidents in that game where he could have kicked up a fuss, you know, red cards, yellow cards. But other than that one incident, everything was dealt with he dealt with that sensibly because he had no option. But, you know, there could have been 1 or 2 other red cards where he looked at the video replay, showed a lot of empathy and kept the game going. And I think he does that a lot. Sometimes, you know, I think Twitter doesn't like him quite as much because maybe there's a few inconsistencies inherent in that, but I've always enjoyed games that he's refereed, so hopefully
he's very much a common sense type of official, isn't he? And he is a little bit of a character, not in the Nigel Owens. Oh my God, that's horrific! Not in the Nigel Owens view. What's that, Ben? You've just shown me.
It's Bristol City's home and away shirts.
Oh, crikey.
Show me that again.
That Bristol can't be their actual
home shirt. Should just be a red shirt.
Which one's it? Which was the home shirt on the
black spots? I think.
Get to fuck.
Bristol City playing red and white.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So it's a shame.
I would say that, yeah, because I think everyone obviously loves Wayne, but for me, JP Doyle is the best referee in the Premiership and the best referee we had, really. I don't understand the decision. Our Premiership referees, this is the thing you need to work out. Our Premiership referees, are they contracted differently from RFU referees? Because do the RFU referees referee in the Championship and other games, and do Premiership Rugby have their own list of referees?
No,
is JP Doyle like, yeah, we don't need you, mate? Or is it, yeah, we don't need you for Championship games?
Well, it just says the RFU, so the referees, I believe, are contracted to the RFU as opposed to Premiership Rugby. So they're supplied by and contracted by the RFU. Now, if that's the case, and JP Doyle's the only one to be let go, I mean, I'm not one to put the cat amongst the pigeons, so to speak, a partridge amongst the pigeons, if you will. But JP Doyle being an Irishman, and all the other English referees just being left on, you know, bit of casual racism from the RFU.
Wow.
I know. And believe me, right? I don't believe that when I say it. But there'll be people out there thinking it, 100%.
There'll be people out there tweeting it.
Yeah. I mean, I think Doug had it right the first time. We just don't know. I mean, it might be that tomorrow he picks up a contract as a refereeing consultant for World Rugby or something. Who knows? But it just seems a shame. He does a good job. We'll probably get some spotty little scrote coming up through the ranks now.
Well, the new referee of who's in vogue is that Christoph Ridley, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen a few times, and I'm starting to believe that he really is heading down the road of that Australian ref who really likes their own
Angus Gardner.
So good he doesn't need a second.
No, isn't it Steve Walsh?
He was the Kiwi. He was the original.
Yeah, that he was the original one with the tattoos on his.
Yeah. He was the original big screen referee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Ridley is in danger of going down that road.
Too many of them.
He's a good ref. Don't get me wrong. He's a very good ref. But I just feel that he can maybe just chill out on the old.
Where would we be without them? We wouldn't have a game without the referees, mate, as I got eloquently told playing vets.
Well, there is that, but there's also the argument that if you didn't have referees and you had to referee it yourself, maybe people would just play fairer.
Be less of a bunch of pricks.
Yeah.
Bit of self-policing. Love it. So this week's fixtures, Ben, you've mentioned a couple of the lineups already. Three games tomorrow, an early game, 6 o'clock. So there's absolute rugby fest on tomorrow. So 6 o'clock is Sale versus Exeter. I'll be at a under-11s cricket match, so I won't be able to watch that, unfortunately. But then Gloucester-Bristol following that at Kingsholm and Wasps versus Worcester. Saturday sees three more, Saracens-Quins, London Irish versus Saints and Leicester-Bath. And that means there's no game on Sunday, which is a bit odd, but if they're all on telly, who cares? Any other rugby-related stuff you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, talk amongst yourselves for like 30 seconds, and I'll come back with it.
Oh, right. This should be interesting. And we all know dead air is a crime, Ben. So
it is a crime.
We need to move through this quite quickly.
Well, if we talk about kits again,
yes,
I quite controversially like the Leicester away one that they're going to be wearing next year with the rainbow sleeves. I quite like that. You seen that?
Yes, I have. Oh, what we got here? Exeter Chiefs for change, right? Just looking on Twitter. Effective immediately, the hashtag Chiefs have banned fans from wearing headdress or American Indian themed face paint and are engaged in a thorough review process of the Arrowhead shop, amongst other changes. Now, that's not what you might think. That is the Kansas City Chiefs in America, not the Exeter Chiefs. But the Exeter Chiefs, the change group, have put another one down. Exeter Chiefs, are you paying attention yet? Chances are no, because they don't really care.
Well, I think, personally, I think Exeter would be well served to ban all of those things, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So I don't know how much sway Kansas City Chiefs have got with Exeter Chiefs. Probably not a lot, but it'd be interesting if they do it, because they've already got rid of some stuff, I believe.
Now Doug has returned. I might take a photo of this for Twitter purposes.
Do you want me to get closer to the camera?
If you want to get close to the camera, you can. Doug is sporting a very fetching Jamaican bobsleigh team face mask.
You're correct, Russ. It is the Jamaican bobsleigh team.
So hold on a minute. You're both now wearing face masks for things that you love. Doug is a Northampton Saint, and Ben is wearing a cowhide face mask.
It's actually, by the way, from Oddballs.
Right.
And when it arrived, I realised quite literally half a pair of pants.
It is. It's half a brief.
Half a pair of pants.
half
That's
a brief.
Amazing. Unbelievable. Hopefully they haven't been tested.
I'm assuming that's Northampton Saints, not the Jamaican bobsleigh team.
Yeah, I just, you know, we'll find out how my paymasters feel about me sporting clearly biased team wear at games. But, you know, I thought it was quite nice, and that is actually the same design as the new Saints kit, which is absolutely banging if you haven't seen it already.
Oh, good. Travis Perkins.
Proper. They've gone back to Travis Perkins, and they've gone back to full hoops, and it is pretty, pretty good. That's two really nice kits in a row from Macron.
Macron?
Yep.
Emmanuel
unfortunately,
Macron.
Unfortunately, they seem to have got a habit of releasing a kit every year, which I don't like. But
that's the way of the world now, mate. That's
the way of the world, unfortunately. I always remember that, like, the kits used to be sort of 2 years, didn't they? The government sort of brought in a thing that said they had to be for 2 years, but
yeah, who knows? Government don't care. They're more worried about other stuff, I think.
Well, like people dying and stuff.
Is it this one, Doug?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
nice. A proper Saints kit, right? Yeah. It's really nice, isn't it? Yeah.
Where were you this weekend,
I
Doug?
Think it's been universally agreed upon that it's a really nice kit. So.
Oh, good. Where are you this weekend sporting your Northampton Saints face mask?
Tomorrow, I'm playing golf at 7:40 a.m. and then I'm travelling to the hallowed ground of the Ricoh Arena for Wasps against...
Oh, you got Worcester again.
The Wasps are playing. Yeah, Worcester. And then
accusations of Worcester fans. Where are you Saturday?
I'm actually really looking forward to it. Doing British Superbikes on Saturday at Snetterton. So I would have been at Saracen's Quins, but I'm doing bikes instead. On the Wednesday, I'm at Saracen's.
Oh, nice.
Got games coming thick and fast now, mate. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday, Wednesday, and then Sunday, Exeter, and then Monday, London Irish, and then Friday, Worcester.
What's the Wednesday game, Doug?
Wednesday, there's three games on actually for the games that I sort of look after. There's Saracens, Gloucester, Worcester Harlequins, and Leicester v London Irish.
And Saints Bath.
So Saints Bath will be the BT game.
Yeah.
The BT facility game. I look after the other games that aren't on BT, so I'm doing the other three. They're all 6 o'clock kickoffs.
So that's why there's no Sunday game.
Yeah, because
they're
playing on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Clever.
And the team selections are going to get a bit fruity.
They are. They're going to be extremely fruity. You mentioned Superbikes there just randomly. and I don't watch motorcycle racing whatsoever, but I saw one of the most horrific
crashes. Yeah, that was
going to
be my any other business. Sorry.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Mate. No, you will. Let's get into that now, because we're going to go any other business from now anyway. So, you talk about that.
So, if anyone hasn't seen it, I mean, it's been all over Twitter because it's been, I mean, it was just me and my dad have, well, obviously my dad's watched MotoGP or Grand Prix motorbikes as it was known for decades. I've been going to the GPs since the 80s. The luckiest thing I've ever seen happen on a motorbike or motor racing track. Valentino Rossi, if you don't know, there was a crash in front of him several years ago with a bloke called Marco Simoncelli. Simoncelli came off the bike and Rossi really couldn't avoid him, and his front wheel hit the guy in the Swede and killed him. Just killed him stone dead. And this Simoncelli guy was a really popular guy. And then, so at the Red Bull Ring in Austria, a little bit of a touch, two bikes sort of behind Rossi and his teammate Vinales, just touched, sort of 200. What people don't understand, that championship is like the Formula One of motorbikes. So they're complete prototypes. They're the fastest motorbikes you'll find in the world. 220 miles an hour. Bloke falls off. Bike goes screaming into the barrier. Stays upright. The bloke falls off it. The bike stays upright. Bit like a horse going, you know, just running free when the rider comes off. Hits the barrier. Somersaults over Vinales in front of Rossi, and the other guy's bike goes between Rossi and Vinales, and there is less than a bike's width and as it passes these guys. And if you see the onboard footage, it's just incredible that how it didn't kill both of them, because Rossi is like the biggest star in Formula One. He's like the Lewis Hamilton of motorbikes, basically. The Vinales thing's sort of been overlooked. But quite easily, if those guys had got to that corner half a second earlier, there would have been two deaths. It's just incredible. If you haven't seen it, go and have a look. Just type in Rossi crash Austria and it will be right there. It's terrifying, honestly. And I work on bikes, and I've had bikes crash underneath me, and they look like little paperweights. They don't look like anything until you hear one and see one crash in front of you. So I had a bike crash literally from me, maybe 2 meters in front of me, hit a foam barrier. You hear it skid along the floor like a really where it's sort of on the concrete. Then it goes quiet when it goes under the grass. And then there's just this heart, well, a ton of, I don't even know how much they weigh, but they weigh a lot, hitting. And then you appreciate just how fast and how violent the crashes are. It's just lunacy that didn't kill anyone. But it's also what makes motorbike racing one of the most exciting sports in the world. Because that kind of shit can happen any time.
Utterly, utterly mental. I've just retweeted it for people that wanted to see it. But the way those two bikes come across, almost simultaneously,
this guy's been riding bikes since he was a kid, literally 8 years old.
I mean,
you saw him in the garage after it happened because the race was red flagged, and he was like looking at his crew chief, just like, holy shit.
That was
you know, and he's reached the end of his career. He's like right there, ready to retire. It's like that kind of thing makes you reassess what you're doing.
Fucking but then hell.
10 minutes later, he goes out and restarts the race. You know, absolute plums of steel.
It's almost like every time I watch it, those bikes get closer. It's really odd. Yeah, check it out. It's the weirdest thing. Ben, any other business for you?
I don't know if I can follow that, but this week been watching Line of Duty from the start, and The first series, I guess, is 10 years old, and it kind of flew under the radar a little bit. I don't remember it being as good as it was. So having watched that, we ate up season two in about 26 hours or something daft like that. It's just a brilliant series, and it just shows you that there's some gems on iPlayer. You don't have to go onto Netflix or Amazon all the time. Just been watching The Fall as well, which is really good. So yeah, BBC, keep them coming.
Line of Duty. Listen here, Sonny Jim.
Oh, what a guy. Hastings is my total favourite. He's so good.
Oh, wow.
Like the battle.
My area of the business is going to be a little bit about me.
Well, it's a surprise.
It's all about you, and it's
all about me.
Everything's about Russ.
So those of you who listen regularly will know that I've started taking golf a bit seriously, and I won a competition. Sorry, and those that know anything about or play golf or watch golf will know that there's a couple of guys called Piers and Andy who do a channel called Me and My Golf on YouTube, and they're like the original sort of internet coaches, I think. And they've got a website, and anyway, Me and My Golf is extremely popular all over the world. They do videos with McIlroy and Johnson and Rahm, and like you name it, they've done a video with them. And I was fortunate enough to win a competition to have a golf lesson with them a couple of weeks ago, and it went live on their YouTube channel yesterday. I over 250 comments on their YouTube, shared on their Instagram.
Why are you teaching Dan Cole golf?
Why is Dan Cole playing golf? Who is this fat Wayne Rooney? I thought Wayne Rooney had a hair transplant. But like 70,000 views on their YouTube, as I say, all over their social media. And I have a coach who I go to at Newquay, who helps me a lot. And then obviously nothing to detract from the stuff that he's taught me and the stuff that we can work on. But to have an opportunity to work with those guys who do videos with the best golfers in the world was such a real experience. And to see like the production value that goes into producing all of the stuff that they do. Obviously, Doug will have a lot more, a bit like multiple camera angles. Everything's all mic'd up. Unfortunately for me, everything's mic'd up, and my heavy nasal breathing and general unfitness is coming to the fore. But it was a great day. Check out Me and My Golf if you don't already. The YouTube is free, and you'll see a video with me on it. It's about 20 minutes long, and you see an absolute stripe show come the end. And and I'm now down to 13 shots on a handicap. So there you go. Absolute winner. Right.
Tell you what wasn't a winner. Your waistline in that shirt, mate.
Oh, really? Not for you?
Under duress, mate. Under duress, that T-shirt.
It's a bit rude. All my golf attire is entirely flexible.
Me and my golf and my gut.
me and my golf and my gut. Like, well played.
We've all had 3 weeks on Eat Out to help out. I think it's a struggle for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just about to say, I've lost a little bit of weight, but yeah, you won't believe me anyway. Right, let's get out of here.
Doesn't really notice, mate. So much.
Just a fucking drop in the ocean, mate.
Yeah.
You're such a prick. On that note, let's get out of here. We'll probably see you again next week. Obviously, there's action coming thick and fast. What I want to do, and I know we kind of mentioned this, I don't know whether it was on the pod or off the pod, is to try and do some kind of like watch along. Like we'll do a live. We'll try and do something live.
Why don't you do it with your mates, Piers and Andy?
I think they're busy, mate.
I think Piers is a bit of a belter as well, to be honest.
Let's hope he doesn't listen.
My favourite thing about that was that and Andy really tries to hide his Brummie accent.
unbelievable. I will not hear a bad word said about either of those.
No, I'm sure they're great guys.
Great guys. Better than you two, anyway. Why don't you go do a podcast with them?
Yeah.
Might well do. Right. Have fun. Go well at the weekend. Enjoy your rugby. Enjoy whatever it is you're doing. And we will see you at some point next week.
Yeah. Just before you tell people to go well, thanks for listening to us when, you know, you're being sucked in by Andy Goode and all those lot and everyone else. And you probably listen to the Egg Chasers. Thanks for taking the time to listen to us, because I know that there's a lot of stuff out there. So we appreciate each and every one of you.
Ah, oh, that's a real heartfelt message from the Lensman.
Especially Matt.
Especially Matt. You love Matt and he loves you.
Yeah.
He'll really enjoy that, Ben. And if you've got this far...
He'll have stopped listening by this point.
Hashtag...
Shanghai. Especially Matt.
Especially Matt. or hashtag me and my gut. See how it goes.
The really unpopular sequel to Marley and Me.
Yeah, me and my gut. And we're not talking about probiotics either. Right. Anyway, we'll speak to you next week at some point. Go well.
Go well. Podcast Network.